We're seeing clients like mine who are in second and third grade being referred to court for things like throwing pencils, and who are being suspended dozens and dozens of times in second grade for doing, in large part, what we would expect a second grader to do.
Studies demonstrate that children most harshly affected by these disciplinary practices live in low-income minority communities, and the data is disturbing. It shows that black students are 4.2 times more likely than their white classmates to be suspended or expelled for the very same infraction. As a result, black students lose 4 times more school days than their white counterparts. For minority children living in poor communities, the role of the school has shifted from a ladder out of poverty into a pathway to prison.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read of America is the right to protest far right. So, Destined, I say we aren't gonna let any dogs or water hoses turn us around. We aren't gonna let any injunction turn.
Ladies and gentlemen of America, coming live from Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is AJC Radio, where we search for justice, bringing the message of justice all around the world. Hold on to your seats real quick. And you may be wondering what is going on at AJC Studio tonight as we tackle an issue that is very important, dealing with the fight against juvenile injustice. And ladies and gentlemen, my name is Lamont Bank, or whatever is on your agenda tonight. We ask you to pull into the house tonight, wherever you are. You may be on the beach, maybe just settling back as the sun sets in your part of the country tonight. We ask you to bring your laptop with you, your iPad, whatever you have that works for you, and tune in to AJC Radio tonight as we get started with a topic that will get you to stop and think. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Lamont Banks, along with Sam Thurman, Lisa Stewart, and of course our famed colleague Cliff Stewart, as we get ready tonight to bring this message of justice around the world. We'll call your family, your friends, and get the kids around the dining room table. We're getting ready to take off here on AJC Radio. And ladies and gentlemen, Sam, Lisa, Cliff, how are you folks tonight?
Doing really good, Lamont.
Great. Great. How you doing?
Doing well. And as we get ready to tackle an issue, before we get started, Lisa, can you read our disclaimer for us?
I sure can. We want to just remind everyone that we are not attorneys and that a Just Cause Coast to Coast does not provide legal advice. You want to contact your own personal legal advisor for all of your legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests do not necessarily reflect that of a Just Cause. And as always, we want to thank you for time with us.
All right, thank you for that, Lisa. We appreciate that. And folks, this has been a day of some things happening. Sam, we were talking earlier, the country is at a crisis at the very moment in which we speak tonight. As we go directly into current news, before we go there, let us go to a couple of things in regards to our very special guest tonight, Sam. Looks like we're going to have special guest Liz Ryan. She's the founder of founder of Campaign for Youth Justice, currently working on the Youth First Initiative. We're going to have her joining us tonight, dealing with the battle, if you will, that's happening right now in our school systems putting our young folks, the future of America, from school to prison. And we're going to be discussing that. We are honored also to have Tanya Washington. Will also be joining us. She's the founder of JusticeCorner.com. Great ladies that are bringing in some things and some information. I believe that is definitely critical because they do deal with who? The children of America. We will also be joined later in the program by Jason Weber, the founder of the National Center for Due Process. And I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, if you're looking for some information that'll get the blood going and the juices pumping, tune into the right place tonight. And we're getting ready to get started with that here shortly. And Sam, we were talking earlier regarding, as we talked a few moments ago, in regards to ISIS being an issue in this country. And Sam, there's a couple of things in the news going on. Get us started on that regarding ISIS right now.
Well, you know, it's no secret that ISIS, that the nation, the president, President Obama, and his administration, as well as Congress, has a watchful eye over the activities of ISIS. And the president even spoke at the Pentagon and talked about some of the plans that the White House has as far as a strategy to defeat ISIS. And as you were discussing just a moment ago, you know, some folks look at the situation and say that, okay, what plan do we have? So as the president unfolded that Washington, the Pentagon, he covered basically four different items. I know that you want to talk about some of the things that, before we get to those four items, I know you want to talk about an article that talked about Congress being slow to authorize the ISIS fight. So, you know, there are several folks who have raised issue with the approach as far as how we're going to deal with it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we said a few weeks on this program that ISIS is a real threat in this country, and they are dealing with that Congress now, Sam, as you said earlier, Congress is troubled right now. There are multiple hearings going on Capitol Hill this week. If you just turn on the news channel, whichever news station you're tuning in to, Congress is concerned, and that means America is concerned, that there are issues with ISIS that we've been saying on this program for the last few weeks. And Lisa Cliff and Sam, we bring to you tonight and to the American people the answer to the ISIS crisis. What was that answer, Sam?
Answer to the ISIS crisis is the IRP6, of course. And you can go out to freetheirp6.org. Again, freetheirp6.org. There's a lot of information about out there regarding the case investigative lifecycle software that the IRP6 developed. And that is at the center of a lot of discussion that Just Cause has had on Capitol Hill. And just very briefly, Lamont, the IRP6 are David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Kerry Walker. And again, that website, if you want to go out there and check out some information, there is a powerful, powerful video out there that really drives it home as to, you know, the result of inactivity or inaction if we don't do anything, and how it is a real threat to the U.S. Citizens and to the U.S. soil if we don't do anything. So go out to freetheirp6.org. Again, freetheirp6.org. You can find out a lot of information about the IRP6, but more importantly, you can find out about their answer to the ISIS crisis.
Well, it says here, Sam, that President Obama made a rare visit to the Pentagon yesterday, delivered an update on the mission against ISIS and an outline of U.S. strategy. What Obama stresses will be a long-term fight. Ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake about it. Many folks involved are aware that ISIS is growing at an alarming rate. They are growing and they are building at a very, very fast rate. Now, Cliff, as we talked earlier regarding the IRP6, the SIP software, my understanding, and this came out of the mouths of folks that have walked in these circles, that the software developed by the IRP6 has the ability to cripple ISIS. So we're going to recommend, ladies and gentlemen, those that listen to this program across the country, to contact your congressmen and senators and let them know as they convene for hearings in regard to ISIS. We have ISIS right now. Cliff, that software is very sophisticated and can make a difference in what's going on. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about software that was, you know, built, coded, developed, and customized at the order of Department of Homeland Security. And that's what you really have to look at. The people who know what this battle is about against ISIS, against Al-Qaeda, against terrorists and terrorism on a whole, these are the people who gave IRP Solutions the requirements to say this is what we need the software to do. That software was built to those requirements. Every customization that Department of Homeland Security asked for, IRP Solutions met those customizations. And that's why DHS had planned to put them in the, you know, in the budget for the upcoming year. But as we all know, 2 weeks after that request for a proposal from IRP Solutions to implement the Silk software, IRP was raided by the FBI.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you have Johnny or Susie or Bob or Tom, maybe in pajamas tonight on the East Coast, recognize one thing is for certain. This is about their future, and this is about the future of America, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, it comes a time, Cliff, Lisa, Sam, that, you know, we can do politics all day long. It takes a little bit of politics to run this country. But when politics begin to get involved to the point where our children become unsafe, as well as our grandchildren and, of course, ourselves, when do we lay that down, Sam, and set that aside? And while you have six men sitting in federal prison, wrongfully convicted, they're sitting there wrongfully convicted as a result of some nonsense. When do we say, get those guys out of there? Because guess what? It's a matter of national security in this country. And for any congressman, senators, the president, his people, whoever's listening, Homeland Security, whoever's involved, we don't have time to delay as ISIS strengthens its hold in this world. And as they approach the homeland, six men, Gary Walker, Kendrick Barnes, Dave Zappolo, Clinton Stewart, Demetrius Harper, and Gary Walker have the answer to ISIS. And it's right now time to get those guys out of custody where they never should have been in the first place, Sam. And time to bring safety to the homeland. Your thoughts on that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, we have the country experienced one of the most tragic events that could have ever happened aside from the attack on Pearl Harbor. But when you talk about the actual contiguous 50 states where an attack actually occurred on the homeland, you know, we experienced the most tragic event that could have happened. And sure, you hear people say all the time, you know, that remember 9/11 and we are not going to repeat that. However, when you get politics involved, you know, it's amazing how short lived our memories can be. And the same thing, well, history will end up repeating itself because of politics. And, you know, if folks end up with blood on their hands because of politics, then, you know, that's a problem. And I was going to say, Lamont, you know, that Just Cause has been to Capitol Hill. You guys have been several times, sure, and have blanketed Capitol Hill with all types of information regarding the IRP 6, but more importantly, the information regarding the answer to the ISIS crisis. So, you know, if any congressmen or senators are listening, would encourage you to touch base with some of your legislative aides or your legislative directors and say, hey, why haven't I heard of this? Now, we know that a lot of them have heard of it.
Sure.
Without question, they've heard of it because a Just Cause has met with a lot of them. But for those who may be questioning, you know, what is this answer to the ISIS crisis, then do an inquiry. You know, take a look. Or better yet, just drop us a line at contact@a-justcause.com. Again, contact@a-justcause.com and say, you know, hey, I want to hear more about this.
No, absolutely. And as we tackle a problem right now in this country that I tell you what, the problem is not going to go away at any time soon unless we do something. I think Sam, Lisa, Cliff, Lisa, you've been sending correspondence to several members of Congress, information. I tell you right now, folks, this is an urgency to act.
Yes.
You know, we can sit back. And Lisa, you've got some response to say that some of the Congress folks out there are responding. They are wanting to get involved. Lisa, what is our target or our strategy right now as we continue to put the assault, if you will, on the doorsteps of Capitol Hill as we seek justice for the IRP-6, but even bigger than that, justice also for the safety of America right now.
Yeah, I think the main thing that we want to do at this point is get as many congressmen and senators on board. We've got several that are that have taken interest and are looking into the this case, looking into all the things that surround it, because the only way they're going to be able to get what they need is by getting the IRP-6 out, getting the software that they produced and that they created, and get it in action. And that's going to take some time. They got to get moving on that. That's our biggest concern right now, is getting that going so that we can start to do something in the right direction of protecting our homeland.
No, absolutely. Cliff, as you sit here and look troubled tonight, as we sit here and talk about this discussion, Cliff, your thoughts on keeping the homeland safe? You were have some knowledge that a lot of folks don't have exactly the benefit of this software and how quick. You know, a lot of folks have things out there, but they are long-term situation. As you hear the president say, this is a long-term issue. Cliff, I can't help but notice that. Your thoughts on the importance of that software and how we need to implement that now. And it will work now. It's not like a year it's going to work once it's done. It works almost immediately. Is that right?
Well, the thing is, you know, it takes time for any system to be implemented. And that's what, like Lisa said, we need to get it to work now so that we can, you know, have it up and running. The data that needs to be fed into it can be fed into it, and it can do the analysis that needs to be done so that we can track. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, yeah, you know, like a lot of these congressmen, the congresspeople, they're telling President Obama, oh, well, what are you going to do about ISIS in Iraq and ISIS in Syria? We need to deal with the fact that it has already been stated that there are sleeper cells here in America.
Absolutely.
That software by ISP Solutions can basically track where those sleeper cells are, how they have connections, and track that all the way back to the ISIS groups over in the Middle East. That is what we need to get implemented. That's what we need to do. Sure, we want to protect our allies overseas, but we want to protect the homeland. Like you say, you know, when we have to look at our children, we have to look at protecting America first and foremost.
Absolutely. And Cliff, as you go there, point three of the president's objectives to beat ISIS says making full use of U.S. power and counterterrorism expertise. And it says to fight ISIS in ways that include cutting off its funding. That software is going to aid in that. The comprehensive strategy includes harnessing all elements of American power across our government, military, intelligence, diplomatic, economic, development, and perhaps most importantly, the power of our values. As Obama said yesterday, these are things that I believe the software has the capabilities of addressing every one of those issues, Cliff.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think, folks, if we can pay attention to that, that will definitely get us to where we need to go. Sam, as we take a look at the president, you have a lot of critics that want to make issue with his strategy, that perhaps the president doesn't have a strategy. We've heard that over the last few days as well. I would reach out to Congress and all the members of Congress, so those who have at least stated that, to pay attention that if that strategy doesn't work for you, what strategy does? And to make that strategy public to the American people. Sam, your thoughts on that?
Well, again, it comes back to the my comments earlier regarding the politics. And you have several folks on Capitol Hill who are basically saying that the president's speech is not strategy, that a speech does not equate to strategy. And but really, when you hear comments like that, that's all about politics. I mean, it's trying to discredit any initiatives or any strategy that may be on the table for consideration. And so that's just like so many other issues that have been at the forefront of discussions. This something this critical. Well, should not be made a matter of political pawn.
Well, Sam, the word critical is what we have here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen of America, whether you're in anywhere in any great state across this country tonight, you want to tune into this program. If you have children, maybe 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and all the way up the number chain, I'll tell you right now that tonight's program dealing with fighting against juvenile injustice. Folks, we're going to get back to the ISIS because that's right in front of us. But definitely feel free to call in tonight to this program. The number is 347-838-8976. That number again is 347-838-8976. And folks, this is getting ready to get a little hairy, as they say, a little sticky regarding the future of America. We're talking about our kids, our children. Coming up on the other half of this break, we're bringing Tanya Washington. We're bringing Jason Weber. We're bringing Liz Ryan to discuss one very important part, and that's your kids. Ladies and gentlemen, this is AJC Radio, fighting juvenile injustice, and we have a big problem. We're going to tackle it when we get back. I'm Lamont Banks, along with Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, and Lisa Stewart. We're on our way back. Hold on to your seats, folks. Get dinner ready. We're getting ready to take off on AJC Radio. We'll be right back.
For a kid whose mom or dad is in prison, life is tough. Now add a wrongful conviction to that, life just got a little bit tougher. Trying to explain to friends why mom or dad is not at the school play or at the ball game is something that no kid should ever be faced with. Especially if mom or dad is innocent. Ladies and gentlemen, get involved today to stop the epidemic of wrongful convictions. By remembering a just cause with a monthly, annual, or one-time donation, you can help in the fight against wrongful convictions. Call a just cause today, 1-855-529-4252. We seek justice for the children. As they go to bed at night and mom's not there, dad's not in the other room to make them feel safe. Not because dad or mom did anything wrong, because justice could not be found. Join us for the children, for they truly are our future.
I'm a mother.
I'm a father.
I'm a sister.
A registered nurse. I serve my country in the United States military.
I'm your neighbor.
I sit next to you at church.
And my child was
arrested,
held in custody,
questioned without my knowledge,
exposed to violence,
witnessed to rape,
placed in solitary confinement,
unable to call or see me,
shackled to a wall,
beaten,
sentenced as an adult at age 17,
sentenced as an adult at age 16.
Sentenced as an adult at age 15.
We felt lost.
Isolated.
Ostracized.
Misjudged.
Terrified.
And in the absence of all hope, my child took his own life.
And then I found the Alliance for Youth Justice.
They gave me the support and resources to get through one of the most difficult times in my life.
Now I know I'm not alone.
And neither are you.
Now we have a voice.
Now we have power.
In numbers.
In numbers.
In numbers.
We can make a difference.
There are approximately 2 million children in the juvenile and criminal justice system in this country. These are the faces of those families. If you are the family member of a child who has been in the justice system, or if you are someone who supports this movement and is ready to make a difference, visit the Campaign for Youth Justice at www.campaignforyouthjustice.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, the folks sitting back on the sofa tonight, they have taken the position that we are in an impossible situation. We got news for you tonight. No mission is impossible when the American people come together to bring about change. And folks, one mission that cannot be impossible is that of our children. And we're going to do a little prelude, Sam, Lisa, Cliff, into what we're going to go into tonight. And I'm going to, you know, pose a question to the host tonight. They all have children. And as we get ready to go into this discussion about juvenile injustice and fighting the horrors, if you will, of the system, Sam, we were talking a few weeks ago. We've talked about the adults that have suffered at the hand of injustice, that have suffered brutality, that have suffered abuse at the hands, whether it's police officers, whether it's whatever you want to call it, in part of the judicial process. We have dealt with that. And you know, Americans can tend to sit back and once that information is brought to them, the American people tend to get troubled. But they begin to become more outraged when you're talking about children. That is what we will go into tonight, that why do we have a situation in our country where not only the judicial system has gone so far out of whack that now even children are being casualties and collateral damage of that particular system? How do we address that as a nation?
Well, you know, there are studies out there, and I'm sure that some of our guests will talk about it a little bit, as to the amount of money that that it costs to incarcerate the juvenile population in the country, and it just, you know, it if they would dedicate more funds to school programs, to education, to after school programs, then I think it's a foregone conclusion, and it is most studies come to the conclusion that we would fare a lot better if the funds went there. I mean, there was one comment that was made by Gladys Carrion, who was director of the New York State Office of Children and Family Services. And Gladys made a comment that said that we could send a juvenile justice youth to Harvard for what we pay for incarceration. And we don't get very good outcomes as far as, you know, incarcerating them. You don't get a good outcome. And it costs a lot of money to incarcerate a kid. It costs a lot of money to incarcerate an adult. But again, when you look at the fact that a kid that's in the juvenile system, it costs a lot of money to keep them there. And that's money that could otherwise be spent in educational programs.
You know, absolutely, Sam. And I think it's, Lisa, you're a mother. I believe that your son is a teenager.
Yes.
You know, I mean, grateful that he's in an environment that is a good one. But what about those kids out there? As you, as a mother, I mean, you're faced with the burden of caring for your son, making sure that he's safe at night, making sure he's getting all the things that he needs at home. How disheartening. And as we get into this program, we're going to see and hear some things that are very troubling. But as a mother, can you get a little bit in the minds of those mothers out there whose kids have been a target of a system that has failed, before we get into this program tonight?
Yeah, I think the main concern that I would be looking at is the system is taking these children, putting them in prison when they need to be learning how to handle these children. The parents need to train their children at home. Then when they go out into society, they need to be handled in the proper way, instead of just saying that, well, if you mess up, you're going to jail. That's not the answer for children.
Absolutely.
Especially when they're putting some of these children in adult prisons, and some of the things that they're having to contend with. I mean, it would horrify me if I thought my son was having to deal with some of those things that I've been reading about this week leading up to this show. But it's just, they've got to, the parents have to do their part, and then the system, our schools and the system, have to do their part as well. So everybody's got a part to play in making sure that all of our children are doing what they should be doing in society and are growing up the way that we want them to grow up and becoming the type of upstanding citizens that we want them all to be.
No, absolutely, Lisa. And for, ladies and gentlemen, that's the voice of a mother, the heart of a mother that speaks to that issue. And right now, you know, Lisa, we said people got to come together and work together. And so we're going to go there tonight as we get ready to introduce two fascinating young ladies who are making a difference. And I'm not going to tell their story. I'm going to let you tell their story. Joining us now via the broadcast tonight, we have Liz Ryan. She is directs the Youth First Initiative. We're bringing her online as well, doing some great things out there. She was the former founder and former CEO of the Campaign for Youth Justice. With spearheads national efforts to end the practice of trying, sentencing, and incarcerating youth in the adult criminal justice system. Liz, are you there with us tonight?
I'm here.
And welcome tonight. I thank you for joining us tonight. Let me introduce your friend and former advocate for justice. That's not former, right now, current advocate for justice, Miss Tanya Washington. Also, a fascinating young lady, founder of JusticeCorner.com, a blog that focuses on highlighting injustice in juvenile systems. She's a senior associate at the Annie E. Casey Foundation and currently working in the Juvenile Justice Strategy Group. How you folks doing tonight?
We're doing great. Thanks so much for having us on.
And that was a collective question, so both comments are welcome. So we appreciate you both being with us tonight. And as we are talking tonight, you've heard a little bit in regards to what we are discussing in regards to the problem with juveniles and I believe they call it the school to prison pipeline efforts that are being made to address these issues. And Liz, you can go first. Give our listeners a little bit of what you do, what your objective is as we get into this conversation of fighting juvenile injustice.
Thanks so much. The Youth First Initiative is really focused on three things. We're focused on dismantling the youth prison model, which is all too often the way that young people are handled in the juvenile justice system. They're locked up and incarcerated in youth prisons at a very high cost and very harmful to those young people. So we're working to dismantle that model. We want to reduce the out-of-home confinement of young people because oftentimes they're placed in not just youth prisons but other out-of-home placements. And we want to see more investment, a shift away from incarceration towards community-based alternatives to incarceration. We know that we can be successful in this effort because there have been a handful of states that have moved in this direction, but that's really the focus of our effort, and we're hoping to work with young people who've been directly impacted, their families and communities, on advocacy efforts in at least a third of the states in the next 5 years.
Oh, wow. So you guys are actively really doing some things to try to make a difference and to curve kids. In my opinion, and Tanya, let me let you go into what you're doing, then we're going to collectively ask questions of the both of you. So bear with me here. Tanya, tell the folks a little bit about yourself and what your efforts are in fighting juvenile injustice.
Sure. Good evening. I want to say hi to Lamont, Cliff, Sam, Lisa, and also Liz as well. I used to practice law in New York. I did criminal and juvenile defense as well as civil rights. And what I found is that the justice system really failed on a lot of levels. And I decided after about 13 years that I wanted to focus on helping to reform and repair the systems themselves. So I joined the Annie E. Casey Foundation as a senior associate to focus on reforming juvenile justice systems. I've been there for about 10 years. And then I decided, because I really speak tonight as an individual, not as a representative of the Annie A. Casey Foundation, but I found that it really requires a collaborative focus with people in the community, the decision makers themselves, the prosecutors, the law enforcement, the judges, as well as the policymakers, to work together to try to change what's not working in the system. And so I do that full time at the Annie A. Casey Foundation, but there's so much that happens under the cloak of privacy in juvenile court that I wanted to share with the public. And as a result, I started a blog, JusticeCorner.com, so that I could share information about what was happening to harm kids so that the public might join forces to try to address the issues in their own communities.
Okay. And then I'm going to let you give you an opportunity to share a little bit about that. We got a clip we're getting ready to play you folks tonight and the listeners of America. And what I want to do is actually get your comments, you and Liz, on this particular clip that we have found. And it deals with a couple of issues in regards to juvenile injustice. Hang on.
We keep holding the children responsible. You're not this, and you suspended from school, and you kicked off the bus, and you're not this, and you're not that. Here's your pink slip, over and over again.
So that student slip through the cracks, and then we either see them out on the streets or we see them locked up.
I know what it does to a child's self-esteem. It's tragic, because I know what the outcome will be.
Children are great at one thing, and that's making mistakes. That's the nature of growing up.
We got it wrong. We got it all twisted.
Wow. And as you hear that, you hear really concerned parents, professionals that are talking about this is what our country has come to as far as the judicial system, is that versus dealing with kids. And the gentleman made the point, kids are doing things that we all did as children that was not considered criminal.
That's right.
When we start putting the focus that it's a criminal issue. Now, we talk about the mental psyche, if you will, of adults that are faced with possible prison time, possible jail time. This goes to the fact of children being threatened with criminal activity for stuff they did as kids that was simply just kid stuff. How do you folks as an organization, and Liz, you can go first on this, how do you folks address this issue? And how challenging is that going uphill against such a huge fight?
Well, Lamont, I really think that one of the main takeaways from that is that far too many young people are ending up in the juvenile and criminal justice systems for actions that wouldn't have been criminalized in the past. And I think that we've lived through the 90s and we've seen an increase in criminalization of young people. And we know from the research that most youth engage in delinquent behavior during their teenage years and most youth age out of it. So engaging in delinquent behavior is normal teenage behavior, and what's happened in the last 20-some years has been that it's been criminalized, and that young people who maybe misbehave in school or in the community are ending up in the justice system. And we're seeing this happen disproportionately to black and brown kids. So there's a racial disparity that's occurring here as well. So the system isn't treating youth of color as fairly as it is white youth.
Yeah, and wow. Tanya, your thoughts really quick on that.
But I underscore what Liz says, that normal adolescent misbehavior, and I think one of the comments in the clip that you played was that kids make mistakes. That's what they're supposed to do. They're kids. And what adults are supposed to do is hold them accountable in ways that will teach them, not criminalize them. What's missing in the system and what needs to happen in a better way is an appropriate assessment so that we can distinguish and separate the types of kids and the behavior that normal adolescent misbehavior that should not be dealt with in the juvenile or criminal justice system from the types of misbehavior that might actually be concerning us in terms of community safety. And if there's that type of misbehavior, then that needs to be responded to by teaching pro-social skills, not locking kids up. And so what I've seen in my travels around the country, and I think Liz has seen this too, is kids being shackled, kids being locked in individual cells, kids, whether it's juvenile system or adult system, they're being mirrored after adult prison. And what that does is interrupt their education, interrupt their adolescent development, and cause them to have reduced life outcomes.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you on that. And, you know, as I sit here and I listen to what you're saying, you know, I struggle with a fact that these are children. I was one, as I explained, I don't know if I explained this to you, Liz or Tanya, being wrongfully convicted at an adult age in my life, sitting in a prison cell for 7 years for a crime I never committed, being exonerated of those charges and the anguish. I was sitting down today, actually reflecting back on what I had gone through as an adult. I'm 46 years old. And I'll tell you what, the tears still fall. The chill bumps still flow, and you still feel that as you think back on what a person has gone through, what I went through. And I sit here and I'm so troubled with the fact that children who don't have the capacity many times at that age to deal with the issues that we deal with. That's so concerning to me because, you know, kids at a certain age, they say are reachable. They can be saved from situations. This type of behavior by the judicial system, in my opinion, how do we know where the end game is, where we've gone too far that those children can't even be reached back. And hold on to your thoughts on that question. Lisa had a comment. Lisa, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering, Liz and Tanya, if you had what your thoughts were in regards to the prison, the children that are being housed in adult prisons, because that to me is there's just something badly wrong with that. I'm trying to understand how you're able to take children, house them with adult criminals, and expect them to fare well and expect them to come out sane, because they're not going to. I mean, I was reading this week about children that are being assaulted in their cells by other adult inmates, about the way the guards are handling the children, and I mean, just manhandling children, and just these things are just this. I don't understand that. What are you guys? What is your take? Are you guys doing anything or trying to find some kind of way to change that, where they can't put children in adult prisons?
There's a couple of issues there. I'll start first. This is Tanya, and I know Liz may have some comments as well. There's a couple issues there. One is the waiver of kids because of the offenses that they're charged with. And in many states, there are offenses that even if you're 13, 14, 15, that are serious enough that they will charge you as an adult. And then there are certain states, like New York, where you are automatically, by statute, considered to be adult at the age of 16. And New York is the state that I practiced in. And so even for very minor infractions in New York, at 16, you go to Rikers Island, and you've seen a lot in the news about what's happened at Rikers Island. And really, it's abusive. The reality is putting kids in confined spaces and locking them up with adults who have been charged with really serious offenses, to me, is abusive. And it really does negatively impact their adolescent development. And it's something that the whole country should be paying attention to and concerned about.
Okay. And just to piggyback on what Tanya just said, that's one of what she said about, you know, kids being exposed to violence and abuse in adult jails and prisons is one of the reasons why the U.S. Attorney General's Task Force on Children Exposed to Violence released a report with a number of recommendations, one of which was that children should not ever be placed in adult jails and prisons. They also recommended that we stop the transfer of kids to adult criminal courts so that they wouldn't be then subjected to the adult jail and prison piece. And I would even add to what you're saying about the kids in adult prisons is that we have close to 90,000 children every year who cycle through adult jails pre-trial. So they're held in an adult facility pre-trial before they've ever been convicted of any crime, and they're exposed to the kind of violence and abuse that happens in adult prisons as well. And so the AG's task force recommended this. Unfortunately, AG Holder left before those task force recommendations were really acted upon. And so I think it's really incumbent on all of us to be continuing to push for implementation of those recommendations. In a number of the states have actually rolled back some of these kinds of draconian laws that are in place that allow kids to be tried in adult court. I know Colorado is one of the states that has taken some serious action on this. But we still, with, you know, over, gosh, it's close to 95,000 kids a year cycling through adult jails and adult prisons, and not much is being done on that. So we have to redouble our efforts in that area and continue to push that this task force report is implemented.
Tanya, this is Sam. And again, thank you to you and Liz for joining the program this evening. I had a question. And Tanya, you made a comment a moment ago regarding the efforts that we should be implementing as far as evaluating the youth and evaluating juveniles before incarceration. And as you both are probably aware, that the Justice Policy Institute a few months ago put out a report called Sticker Shock. And it talks about the cost of confinement and how expensive it is. And I found it interesting that there was a section in there that asked the question, what do victims of crime really want? And they published some results there, and they say it was the first of its kind survey that was done. And one of the responses was that victims prefer investments in mental health and drug treatments by a 3-to-1 margin over incarceration. And I found that to be very interesting, that even the victims of crimes see the senseless act of incarcerating our youth, at least, you know, at least 3-1 margin, I see it that way. And in the work that both of you do, and Tanya, let's start with you. How does that align with what you were talking about earlier? And do you have some ideas or some examples, I would say, of how certain states or certain municipalities are investing in mental health and drug treatment programs or evaluations over incarceration?
Absolutely. And it aligns perfectly. It's a question of an effective use of taxpayer dollars. Do communities and people in communities want to invest their money in ways that will protect community safety and effectively address whatever serious adolescent misbehavior there might be? Or do they just want to throw their money into a juvenile prison and lock kids up where they're going to come out on the other side with a high recidivism rate? And so some of the states that I work in, I've worked in Florida, I've worked in Georgia. Georgia recently, in 2013, passed a new code, a new juvenile code that reduced the eligibility for the secure confinement placement. And at the same time, the governor invested or got the legislature to invest at that time $5 million in evidence-based practices that would really focus on things that work for kids, keeping them in the community, keeping them in their homes, keeping them in schools, but addressing some of the serious patterns of misbehavior. In addition, what the new code did and what I've helped to implement in Georgia is the usage of objective decision-making tools. There's somewhat actuarial to predict long-term recidivism and to focus on those kids who score into a high category of risk, similar to what insurance companies do. They ask a bunch of questions and figure out how to charge parents higher for kids who are more, for insurance for kids at a certain age who are more likely to get into an accident. Doesn't mean they're going to get into an accident, but it's just that the answers to the questions mean that you're going to pay more, a premium, if you're dealing with adolescents. This is the same concept, that if kids are not really connected to pro-social activities, if they have gotten in trouble or arrested at a really young age, those kind of questions, and they add up and say, well, this young person scores into a category that's likely to commit an offense in the long term. And so that the resources can be focused on those kids as opposed to some other kids who might have done something silly, boneheaded, you know, what normal kids do when they act out. But there's a difference between addressing that behavior and addressing a kid that's more likely to engage in the kind of behavior that we're worried about. And so Georgia was able to focus on these new instruments and to put money into the hands of localities so that they could invest in community options. And it's starting to make a difference. The numbers of youth who are being incarcerated are starting to seriously go down in Georgia. And hopefully what will happen is, as money is saved at the state level, in Georgia it's $90,000 a year to lock up a youth in the most secure juvenile facility. When that's saved, we're hoping that they will then continue to reinvest in the community options.
Okay, and you know what? I think one problem I think we face, Tanya and Liz, as a country, as we have seen the events that have unfolded the last several months in this country, with the Eric Gardners in New York, with Walter Scott in South Carolina, with Michael Brown, with all the things that we have seen, the Baltimore uprising, all that has happened as a result of injustice. My question, and think about this when we come back, I'll get your thoughts on it on the other side of this break. What impact do children, our children, what impact is this having on our children who are dealing with what you're talking about in the school to prison pipeline as they are disciplined or treated as criminals in many cases in schools. And as they turn on the news, folks, I can tell you, and as we talk to America as well tonight, as your kids come home and turn on the TV and see what we have seen as adults, I tell you what, that's got to be a challenging, huge challenge for kids to be able to digest and to deal with those issues. I would think would be almost impossible to deal with, or very, very difficult to deal with for kids. We as adults deal with these issues as well. And on the other side of the break, I'd like you to give your thoughts on that. How then, and I believe we must address the big issue, the judicial system is broken. And it does not only affect men, women, but it affects boys and girls who go to school and see this every day, hear it in the classroom, see it on the televisions. What are we doing to address that? That makes the problem that much bigger and that much challenging that we must face and fight, that the impact of our society is having a huge negative impact, I believe, on our kids, which contributes to the problem that you two ladies are dealing with and fighting and going up against. Ladies and gentlemen, this is AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice all around the world. Joining us tonight is Tanya Washington and Liz Ryan, giving some insight on juvenile injustice, as these are advocates of justice that are looking for answers and ways to bring change to a country that is swirling out of control. We'll be right back on the other side of this break. I'm Lamont Banks, along with Sam Thurman, Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, bringing the message of justice around the globe. We'll be right back with you. Hang on to your seat, folks. We're just getting started about the safety in the future. And who is that future of America? It's the children. It's the kids. We'll be right back.
Do you know anyone who's been sent to prison who's innocent? The United States is experiencing record numbers of exonerations in cases where people were wrongfully convicted of crimes they did not commit. If you believe that no one should be sent to prison for crimes they didn't commit, there is something that you can do today. By remembering A Just Cause with a monthly, annual, or one-time donation, you can help in the fight against wrongful convictions. Call A Just Cause at 855-529-4252 or visit a-justcause.com and click the donate button. A Just Cause is a 501c3. Wrongful convictions are wrong. Let's be the voice of those who can't speak from behind the wall.
We know you care. Now it's time. Time to change the face of justice.
Did you know that minority and youth participation in juries is extremely low to non-existent?
The incidence of youth and minority offenders faced with trials have exploded.
Youth and minorities are not being represented as they should be.
We must represent for people to get fair trials.
If you acquire a state ID or driver's license, it allows you to register to vote.
And it allows you to become eligible for jury service.
If you're 18, a U.S. citizen with a state ID or driver's license, and registered to vote,
you're eligible to be called for jury duty.
If called and selected, make it your duty to serve.
We can't get justice without you. Change.
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 Change the face of justice.
Check your local county or state jury service website for further details.
History is important because it shows where you're coming from and where you're going. Type 2 diabetes is something that runs in my family, which means I'm at risk. In fact, 1 in 3 American adults are at risk for developing type 2 diabetes. And knowing this, if I do nothing, that family history becomes my family's future. And my family is too important to me for that. Take the risk factor assessment today at AskGreenKnow.com.
Students, and welcome to Career Day. I hope you're excited to hear about all the great things you can do when you grow up.
Hi everyone, I'm Emily. I'm super excited to introduce my dad because he's my hero. When I was little, my dad was away a lot, but I was okay with that because he was doing this really important work, driving ambulances in Iraq. Now he's at home, which is great for me because I get to see him every day now. And he's still the biggest hero I know because he tells all the ambulances and the fire engines where to go and rescue people when there's an emergency. I'm so proud of him. He's awesome. He's my dad.
If your service-connected disability prevents you from continuing in your civilian career, Voc Rehab offers counseling, training with a living allowance, education, and other services to help prepare you for your next mission.
It's called the School to Prison Pipeline, and it's a national trend where children are funneled out of public schools and into the juvenile and criminal justice system.
And we look at the children who are incarcerated. This child, a punishment for holding his food slot. He's being chained to the food slot. 16, 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds, pregnant women inside solitary incarceration. These photographs were taken by Professor Richard Ross of Berkeley, California. He has a project called Juvenile Injustice, and what he's showing is like how 12-year-olds are in solitary, how we have youth who are 18 and 16 left inside a cell with no items, how we chain our youth, devices of torture that are used to restrain children, like the Ethan Allen School in Wisconsin. This is a school considerably, but it's similar to a maximum security correctional facility. Here we have also in another cell in South Bend, Indiana. This is considered a schoolyard. So it's a cage with a little basketball court, and that's what it is for the kids. And we're talking about housing and torturing children.
Five Mo'allem Ak is now a prison reform activist and director of the Incarcerated Nation campaign. He spent 12 years in prison, and while incarcerated in New York State Prison, he spent five of those 12 years in solitary confinement for nonviolent infractions. His activism has reached schools and universities nationwide. These images fill the walls of his office, reminding him every day of the difficult task before him in his fight for reform.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice all around the world. And ladies and gentlemen, as we have been talking tonight about fighting juvenile injustice, and Sam Lisa Cliff, hearing that clip of 12-year-olds and 14 and 16-year-old kids chained in a cell with no items of any, what in the world is my question going on in America right now with our kids?
Well, it's like they're this school to prison pipeline is just a preparation for the prison industrial complex. You know, back when I was in, I guess, seventh, eighth, maybe ninth grade, we had what we call reform school. And I wasn't a saint as a child. I ended up going to reform school. But I remember that, you know, you had to do a few bad things. They told you you're going to go to reform school if you, you know, come to the principal's office, you get another fight, whatever. When we got to reform school, that's where the threat of bringing the police in. They said, if you get in a fight, it's no principal's office, the police are called. But when I look back at it, I see that, you know, you have the underprivileged kids, the minority kids, the ones that come from communities where, you know, your typical teacher doesn't understand. Well, your typical white teacher doesn't understand a minority child in the way that they interact. So if you have a black kid that, you know, may be a little boisterous, things that come from that child's community. Mm-hmm. And then you have a white, most of the times, more conservative teacher, and she feels offended by that, he or she sends this kid to the principal's office, say, you know, this kid's being boisterous in school. This is what kids do.
Right.
Third, fourth grade, after a few times of that, they say, we're sending you to a reform school. So who ends up at the reform school? The kids from the minority communities. And then they're threatened with, if you do something here, we're calling the police on you. And this has escalated into what we see today as the school to prison pipeline, because now there is no more reform school. It's if you do something that we deem not what we like as a teacher. So if I do something that kids do, if I'm in the lunchroom and I decide, hey, I'm going to start a food fight, I'm taking my mashed potatoes, I'm throwing them across the table to somebody. You call the police on a child for that?
Well, Cliff, I'll tell you what. The biggest fear I had coming up in school is that when a teacher came in and said, I just contacted your mother. she's very calm at that point. And she said, I just got off the phone with your mom, Lamont. We talked it through. Everything's fine. She's going to talk to you when you get home. Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? That conversation, I was scared. And this was told at about 9 o'clock in the morning.
Was that a one-way conversation when you got
home? But I think the point being, and Tanya Liz, you can chime in on this, I did not want to face my mother.
Oh, absolutely.
In regards to goofing off and laughing and doing crazy stuff in class. And I say that to say this. A lot of this starts at home. There was some things that I knew were acceptable at home, and I knew things that wasn't acceptable. And, the teachers had no concept of what they had just told me or the fear that they inflicted in my heart at that time that mom had been talked to already. Perhaps had mom not been talked to, we could have came to some type of negotiation that I would behave better. but mom took care of taking care of that as soon as I got home. Sam, your thoughts on that? And Liz and Tanya, we're coming right to you to get your responses here.
Well, I think you're absolutely right as far as, it starts at home. And we all hear the adage that it takes a village. And I remember growing up, it didn't have to be my mother or my father to see me doing something that was not appropriate. Any neighbor within a mile of our house, is like, and it was just a phone call away. And that was way before cell phones or pagers.
Sure.
It did not matter at that point. Somehow, by the time you got home, the word was already there.
Right. And the thing that you have to take away from the conversation about, family and your mom being the one doing discipline is that at no time, Lamont, did you think, OK, I was goofing off in class. I may have been acting a class clown, making jokes, not doing what the teacher says, speaking out of turn, not raising my hand, playing with other kids, throwing spitballs, whatever. At no time. Did you ever consider today I'm going to jail for throwing a spitball
in class?
Absolutely. You did not. It never crossed your mind. I mean, sure, you had
the stakes are higher.
Right. You had an environment at home that says you're going to be disciplined. You're going to do what your teacher says. Otherwise, you're going to have to face the consequences at home. But at no time when we were coming up, did you think that because I was horse playing in class, now I am going to jail? I'm going to be shackled. I'm going to be put in a room, basically solitary confinement. As a school-age child, that is the part that truly has to bother anyone with a kid, that my kid is going to get arrested for balling up a piece of paper or screeching chalk across the board. I mean, they use whiteboards nowadays, but, as an example, how do you arrest a child and lock them up and shackle them for things that minor and frivolous?
And I think as you go to that, that's what Tanya and Liz are doing, of addressing these issues,
yes,
that there
absolutely.
Has to be. Tanya and Liz, whichever one you want to go first, to chime in on what you've heard on the clip, as well as Cliff's point of view of the threats of going to jail. And again, this just, again, talks to what you folks are striving to bring about change in this country. Liz, go ahead.
Well, your point about minor misbehavior in school and then kids getting arrested in schools, what we've seen is a rise in referrals from schools to the justice system. And that's a direct result of placing law enforcement officials in schools. So what used to happen before, where a teacher, if you were misbehaving, the teacher would send you to the principal's office, now they just send you to meet with the cop who's in the school and you're arrested or referred to the juvenile justice system. And so we're seeing that's one of the ways that the pipeline is starting. We're also seeing criminalization of minor misbehavior. So things that would have been sort of a minor infraction in the school is now something where you're going to have a juvenile record. We're also seeing very harsh, very punitive punishment of young people in the juvenile justice system, so that when kids touch the juvenile justice system, it actually creates more harm for those young people, and we're actually increasing the likelihood that they'll reoffend. So in fact, the concept that you were saying, Cliff, about it being a feeder system to the adult criminal justice system is exactly right. The kids are going through the deep end of the juvenile justice system through these harsh and punitive and harmful and wasteful and ineffective youth prisons. We're also seeing kids just being sent directly to adult court through transfer laws and laws that allow for young kids to be placed in adult court. So in order to reverse all of this, there are a number of organizations out there that are working on it. The Advancement Project is a national organization working to end the school-to-prison pipeline. They've focused a lot on school climate issues, having, you know, more restorative justice and supportive school programming in schools, reducing the amount of law enforcement in schools, so things that would help to reduce the referrals of kids to the juvenile justice system. We're also seeing organizations like Campaign for Youth Justice working on ending the prosecution of kids in adult criminal court. And, of course, what we're working on in terms of keeping kids out of the deep end of the juvenile justice system and dismantling that model. But let me say, this is not something that's going to happen just on its own. I mean, there are big moneyed interests in keeping the system the way it is. And when we're spending $5 billion a year to lock up children in the justice system, somebody's benefiting from that. So if we want to uproot that, we really have to organize and get people involved in these efforts. And that's what we're trying to do with Youth First, by connecting with people all across the country, as are these other organizations that are working at various points along the pipeline.
No, absolutely. And Tanya, your thoughts on that as well?
Sure. I underscore everything that Liz said. I want to highlight for your listeners really the types of atlas of behavior that we're talking about. Under the law, it's considered a status offense, things that wouldn't even be crimes if an adult did them. So truancy, underage drinking, cursing at a teacher. And to highlight, I think, something that Lamont said earlier in terms of whether it feels unjust, that's a huge thing to children. If kids don't think that they're being treated fairly and with dignity, that actually is counterproductive in terms of positive outcomes. And so imagine, and I've actually witnessed this, imagine being 14, 15 years old, cursing at a teacher, and the next thing you know, you're in handcuffs, body shackles, and leg shackles being shuffled into a juvenile courtroom before you're found guilty of anything, but the charge is cursing. That's wow. A travesty. That's a system that is failing. That's not making the community safer. And as Liz has said, the research highlights that it's actually making the community less safe, because when you throw a youth into a secure detention center, even with other young people who have committed more serious offenses, they're going to learn more serious misbehavior. And they're going to come out of that juvenile detention center more likely recidivating, whereas if they never got treated that way, they would probably either grow out of the behavior or just not do it again. And you can hold them accountable. We're not saying that kids shouldn't be held accountable. I mean, just as Lamont and Cliff were saying, your parents and any responsible adult can hold you accountable, but in a way that helps you get a lesson without traumatizing you. And locking a kid up, whether it's in shackles, whether it's solitary confinement, any over-response in that way is traumatic. And it really doesn't do any good. And it's very expensive.
And I would, I just wanted to make a point about, you know, putting children in adult prison. Everywhere that you look, there's a separation of children and adults. If somebody's having a party, a parent's going to say, who's going to be there? Well, I'm 14, but hey, there's going to be some 18, 19, 21 year old men. You're going to tell your kid you're not going to that party. It's not going to happen. If you say, OK, well, I'm going to Chuck E. Cheese, I'm 14, but guess what? This is the 22 year old party night. If you go to a concert, you want to make sure there's other kids there or that at least there's a chaperone with the your child or the group of children that your child is with. There's a separation in society from adult to children, and it is for a reason. It's to protect the children. And then when you go to the so-called justice system, where we're supposed to say this is where a child gets reformed. This is where a person goes to, you know, to basically think about what they've done wrong, but to get help. Then you throw kids in a room with adults and they're being assaulted in all type of unimaginable ways. That's the place where you remove the separation in the most dangerous aspect that we have in the country, in the prison system. That's where you take away the separation. It's totally insane.
Oh, Cliff, Tanya and Liz, you know, you guys are so full of information. Man, we're going to have you back on the program again, because I think what you folks are doing, we had a show some weeks ago entitled The Unseen Heroes of Advocacy. And I'll tell you what, tonight, folks, ladies and gentlemen of America, these two ladies fall into that category of heroes and administrators of justice and the search for that. And we're going to definitely have to have you come back. It's amazing what happens. The old saying says time flies when you're having fun. And tonight, the information we've heard from these young ladies, I'm telling you, will have you stopping and scratching your forehead and thinking thinking of what we can do next to get involved. Tanya and Liz, I'll let you go and give your information out to our listeners. Would you folks be willing to come back and join us at a later date that we might do a part two highlighting what you folks are doing? I think is absolutely fascinating. Would that be all right with you folks?
Happy to.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I'd say you both concur with that, and we appreciate that. Liz, how can folks get a hold of you? Our listeners out there, and we're going to post things out there on our website for AJC Radio, where folks can go out there, AJCRadio.com. He listen to this program at any given time. Liz, how can folks reach you?
The best way right now is through our website, which is still under development, but it won't be hard to remember this name. It's called End Youth Incarceration, endyouthincarceration.org.
Okay, and Tanya, your information.
A couple of places. On my blog at www.justicecorner.com, there's actually an email address, justicecornerblog@gmail.com. I have a Facebook site, Justice Corner, or they can find me on Twitter at TWASHESQ or at Justice_Corner. And it really does start with awareness. So I want to thank you for addressing this topic and for having Liz and I on this evening. And I encourage your listeners to email me at justicecornerblog@gmail.com with any youth justice stories, because I really want to continue to raise awareness and shine a spotlight when it's happening, wherever it's happening in this country.
Okay, folks, Tanya and Liz, we appreciate it. And just for the record, we are in talks with Tanya in regards to the children of the IRP-6, which, Tanya, we've talked in detail. Liz, I don't know if you had an opportunity. Folks, go out to AJCRadio.com and ajustcause.com, a-justcause.com, and check out the website there in regard to the IRP-6. And Liz, Tanya, you folks have been a delight tonight. Thank you so very much. We will be in touch with both of you as we together look and fight for justice all around the world. And we thank you for joining us tonight. Have a good and safe evening. You guys have my contact information. Contact us. We're going to go forward with pursuing justice. And that's about us working together. And we do definitely appreciate it. And thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule tonight and joining us. We really appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break and come back. I tell you what, we're going to be wrapping up the segment here tonight about juvenile injustice. We have a warrior of justice by the name of Jason Weber that's going to join us on the other side of this break. Jason, if you're out there listening, and we apologize for the delay in getting started, hold off on that cup of hot chocolate and perhaps a couple of pieces of toast you were getting ready to put in for the close of your day today. Maybe something else was on the menu for you. Just hold tight. We're coming back with Jason Weber, and I call him an advocate for justice. Hang on to your seats, folks. We're coming right back. This is Lamont Banks with AJC Radio, Sam Thurman, Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, as we seek for justice and bring the message of justice all around the world. We'll be right back with you. Hold on to your seats.
Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
Do something good for your community.
Reuse bags and bottles and always recycle.
Help us collect 1 million pounds of food.
Help people prepare for natural disasters.
Do something about homelessness.
Anyone could be a rock star in their community.
So then do something.
Do something.
Do something.
Do something.
Visit dosomething.org to find out how.
Can you imagine spending 20 years of your life in prison for a crime you didn't commit? Neither could I until I got the opportunity to portray Betty Ann Waters in the film Conviction, telling the real story of how she freed her brother Kenny. Sadly, what happened to Kenny happens far more often than you might expect. But together, we can stop it. Please join me in helping the Innocence Project fight injustice. Go to innocenceproject.org to make a donation and get involved.
Over 1 million people are sitting in the prisons of America for nonviolent offenses. That's why I'm asking you to join the American Civil Liberties Union and help us in the fight to end mass incarceration. We spend over $80 billion a year incarcerating people. Alternatives to prison, like community service, drug treatment, and rehabilitation, costs less and can turn lives around. It's time for fair justice. It's time for smart justice. And we need your help.
Not only does texting while driving significantly reduce your reaction time, but you are also 10% more likely to leave your lane. This commercial was 30 seconds. That's all it takes to avoid a senseless tragedy.
Our children are literally eating themselves to death.
Many experts predict that this may be the first generation of children that doesn't live as long as their parents because of the problem of obesity.
A quarter of American children don't exercise regularly. The average school-age child watches 4 to 6 hours of TV every day, bombarded by commercials for fast food and junk.
How you make these kinds of lifestyle changes in your kids is to make them yourself.
Make the effort. Fight childhood obesity. A message from the Government of Canada.
Ladies and gentlemen, mostly cloudy skies here in Colorado Springs tonight, and I'll tell you, a slight mist is falling across the land and the state of Colorado, but in New York City, partly cloudy most of the day today, and I'm sure folks are kind of sitting back with a cup of tea on the porch as the end of the day closes out and as the kids get ready for bed. Been a good day, and folks, Sam, Lisa, Cliff, as we have talked about the future of America, and that's our kids and our children who have been a target of a system that is doing some things that's not quite right. Sam, your thoughts on our guests tonight as they have gone into that, and we're going to bring another warrior in here in a few moments of justice by the name of Jason Weber. Sam, your thoughts on the guests, Tanya and Liz, had a lot to contribute.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, Lamont, it's definitely need to have them back. Because there's a lot of information, and as you said, time flies when you're having fun, so to speak. And I'm sure we barely scratched the tip of the iceberg as far as some of the things that they're involved in, especially, you know, if you go out and look at their respective websites as far as, or even just look up information on them regarding Youth First Initiative, as well as JusticeCorner.com. go out there and just, you know, do a little study on them. And they got a lot of things going on, and we look forward to having them back.
Absolutely. Lisa, any thoughts on our guest? Had a lot to offer as fighting for justice. Kind of refreshing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to see that you've got somebody working for these kids, because I think that's probably the worst thing I've ever heard of in my life, is seeing children put in prison for being kids, basically. Locking them up for being kids and the things that they're having to go through. Somebody needs to speak up for them. And I'm glad that they actually have somebody out there who's putting their voice to it for them.
No, absolutely. So, and Cliff, your final thoughts on our guest.
Yeah, I think the fact that, you know, you look at especially Tanya as an attorney that would advocate for these children to say, hey, you know, I'm going to use what I've learned in my law profession, and I'm going to take my passion as, you know, it could be a mother, it could be a woman. I mean, but just a human being to say, I'm going to take my passion that someone's being mistreated, and I am going to do everything that I can to do something about it. I think the fact that these two ladies have, you know, basically dedicated their life to ensuring and fighting for children that, you know, don't have a voice and aren't able to fight for themselves. I commend them on the work that they're doing.
Okay. And Cliff, thanks for that. Always offering good insight on issues on this show. We appreciate that. Folks, ladies and gentlemen of America, as we said earlier, we have a gentleman by the name of Jason Weber joining us now. And Jason is doing some great things. I had the privilege of talking to Jason on a couple of occasions prior to him appearing on this show tonight. And my hat's off to this young man who's making a difference, who believes in justice, the minister of justice, and fighting for justice. And we're going to bring him on now and get his thoughts. And Jason, a pleasure to have you tonight. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Lamont. Thanks for having me. And I really, you know, enjoyed what, you know, and what Tanya had to say and what you had to say. And you guys were spot on. We have major problems in this country. And you can start with the fact that we have, in 2009, law enforcement officers arrested about 2.5 million juveniles.
Wow.
And the problem is we're building prisons, not schools. We're not offering these juveniles alternatives to incarceration, incentive to get better, ways to improve themselves. Instead, we're just taking the easy way out. We're opening up the cell and throwing them in and locking the key.
No, I agree with you, Jason, on that. I understand here that I guess you were born and raised in Detroit. No disrespect to, but you've come up in some situations in life that you, I would presume, which contributes to the passion that you have in fighting for justice. What kind of got you going in dealing with this passion of yours inwardly that caused you to do the work that you do now?
That's actually a very simple answer. I was caught in a situation where, granted, it was not a serious charge, but I was caught in a situation where I was basically coerced into a plea bargain, pleading to a DUI. This made me look much more into the system, and more I researched into the system, the more and more I found so many fundamental flaws. And so I started working with a group of activists out of nearby Detroit, Ann Arbor. And I just decided I wanted something more formal, more organizational, and that's when, a little over a couple of years ago, we started forming the National Center for Due Process.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So as a result of you being dealt with, I would say unjust, it caused you to seek for answers. As you begin to seek for them. Go ahead.
I would say my passion for due process, you know, goes even before that. Lamont, you know, that might have been the final nail in the coffin, if you will, but my passion for due process has been really since my college days at Cornell University.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it says here the National Center for Due Process, that is your organization, says the National Due Process is a young, tech-savvy, aggressive, and ambitious nonprofit organization dedicated to criminal justice policy change. And I think that's what stands out to me, that you're looking to bring change to an existing system that apparently is showing that it doesn't work. I believe it says here that the United States has only 4.4% of the world's population. Yet we warehouse an alarming 25% of the world's prisoners, locks up 700 people per 100,000, which is at least 700% greater than most other democratic nations. Those statistics are alarming. I mean, those statistics.
They really are.
I mean, you want to speak to that?
They really are. And one out of, you know, four people in America will be somehow adversely affected by the American criminal justice system. And that is obviously higher for some demographics than others. But we feel there are fundamental flaws in our system, a number of them, and we blog about them on our website. As a matter of fact, you and I, when we talked about one of the fundamental flaws, that being the felony murder statute that 46 of our states have. And there, I actually have a gentleman in Boulder who is 18 years old. He has a verbal comprehension IQ of 51. Now, he was with a gentleman who took a baseball bat and murdered someone. So the prosecutor out of Boulder, Mr. Finn, decided to throw a felony murder charge on Luke Pelham, P-E-L-H-A-M, stating that he was actually there to be involved in a robbery, which there is no circumstantial or no physical evidence to suggest.
Okay. Okay, now, Jason, we got notification that there was a young lady that wanted to come on and share a few minutes with us in regards to something that's happened with her kids. Is that correct?
Yeah, she was calling from a 970 number.
Okay, let's see. I think we may have her. Let's go ahead and bring her on.
Yes, we have Terry from Boulder. Are you with us, Terry?
I am. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead and give us a little bit of your background. Let the audience know who you are, and then you can go ahead and get into things.
Well, I'm the mother of Luke Pelham, as well as his court-appointed guardian, because he is considered an adult with disabilities. And from the beginning of this case, we've been told to remain silent because the attorneys did not want us to fight this case in the media. The result of that is that all there is bad, misinformed media. So my son, who he had a hypoxic birth, he ceased and had to be resuscitated, was put into an oxygen tent, caused some miscellaneous brain damage. And then a short while after that, we found out that he has Klinefelter syndrome, which is an additional X chromosome, which does all kinds of things to your comprehensive language, your receptive language, your expressive language. And so I spent 18 years working specifically with him on expressive language so he wouldn't stand out so much. And now, because he can express himself, I have a judicial system that says if he can talk, he's normal. So he was friends with the victim. I assume that the other person was as well, but my son and the person who committed the crime had only met a couple of days before. And my son was already on his way to the victim's house when he encountered this other gentleman, who told him a tale about hitting some girl, which my son didn't believe right away, and said that he would ask him about it when he got there. The other guy decided to come along. So they went. My son went upstairs, had a chat with his friend. The other guy stayed outside. And my son just never brought it up. He just didn't believe that the victim in this case would do that. So he just let it go. And he went down the stairs, and when the other boy asked him, did you ask him, what did he say about XYZ, the girl, my son responded, I didn't bring it up, which irritated the other individual. So the other individual set a golf club down next to my son and said, if things go bad, you better have my back. And the one step I'm missing is, as my son was coming down the stairs, he was calling a mutual friend of theirs who he had also picked up her guitar from that location to tell her he was on her way to his house when his phone died. So he's standing at the bottom of these stairs. He doesn't think like the rest of us do in the first place. And he's looking at the situation now like, wait, what? And the other individual goes up the stairs, and Luke notices that when he reaches the top of the stairs, he had a baseball bat. So he knocked on the door, and this other person, also knowing Aaron, was allowed in. And a few moments later, my son began hearing what appeared to be an altercation. And he tried to call 911. His cell phone was dead, and he froze. And that's what he does. He has anxiety attacks when he gets put under pressure. He's been bullied his entire life, and he has never fought back ever, not even for himself. He puts his hands over his face, and he just takes the beating. He's naive. He thinks everyone is his friend, and one of the biggest problems is he doesn't recognize social cues properly like you and I do, like anger, happy, sad, mad. So here he is in a panic and not knowing what to do when the kid comes down the stairs and walks up to him with a very bloody baseball bat, which set my son into a level of panic that my son has never known. So my son is trying to make excuses to get away from this person while they're walking away for fear of his own life. And finally he said, I have to go back to Aaron's, thinking that that would be a way to get away from the individual who committed this. Well, the other individual was smarter than my son, and he knew the condition of the victim, whereas my son did not. So he didn't buy it, and he followed him. And they went back to the apartment. The other gentleman opened the door. My son saw his friend's feet on the floor and sent him into a further panic. He closed the door from the outside and tried to leave again. And the other individual came down with stolen objects that he had taken from the victim. And my son continued to try to make excuses to get away from this person. He was afraid if he'd ran that this kid would kill him. And if he didn't find him, he would go to the girl with the guitar's house and hurt her or lie in wait for him. So when he finally did get away from this individual, he went straight to her house, called the police. He doesn't remember addresses or phone numbers, so he had to have the police pick him up. And they took him to the scene. He showed them where it was. And for this, my son got charged with felony murder because his friend died 8 days later.
Oh, with no one to corroborate his story. Is that correct?
I'm sorry?
You said the young man that passed away, he died eight days later?
Right, 8 days later.
Okay, so...
Yeah. The person who committed this crime has told the police all along that he's confessed over and over. He's admitted to them that my son was not in the apartment. He did not participate. He had no direct connection to the assault or the death of Aaron. And yet the prosecution persists. And okay. They claimed that they had evidence, but when the evidence came back from the crime lab, it came back clean against my son. And so I don't even know. Charges should have been dropped.
Sure.
But they now, were not.
Is your son still in custody right now?
He is. Actually, he's been forced to take a plea bargain because felony murder, the jury, the way I understand it, the jury will be instructed to find that he was there, which we know he was because he called the police, and that he knew that the other individual may have reason to be angry with the victim, which obviously he did, and that he was still there. So, I mean, that the prosecutor can turn that into assistance before, during, and after.
Question, Jason. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Jason, your thoughts on this. What exactly is the battle plan now? Has he signed the plea agreement, Jason?
Well, Matt, can I back up just a second here and say that I feel, I mean, it's part of my organization's belief that a lot of the problems we're experiencing today started with the Comprehensive Crime Control Act of 1984, which, as a nonpartisan organization, I must say, the first time tough on crime was stated in a State of the Union address was 1980. Shortly thereafter, we have the Comprehensive Crime Control Act of 1984. Now, what that did is that made our modern-day mandatory minimums, our modern-day sentencing guidelines, and this gives prosecutors enormous powers, and I cannot understate this enough. Prosecutors' powers are burgeoning, they're out of control, and in this particular case, you know, with Luke Pelham, that's a perfect example. The prosecutor basically said, look, at either, you know, you go for felony murder and I can, you know, say you robbed an Xbox and then you'd be found guilty and go to prison for life, or accept this 35. it's wrong, and that's why, you know, I say all the time, we have a coerced plea bargain epidemic. As a matter of fact, over 95% of state cases, over 97% of federal cases are resolved through behind-the-scenes, non-transparent coerced plea bargains, which is the exact opposite of what Americans think when they watch CSI.
No, absolutely. And let me first say, Jason, thanks to Terry for calling in, for sharing her story with us. In regards to this injustice, Terry, thank you so much, and we applaud your courage to continue fighting for justice for your son. And we will also do what we can on this end to seek justice as well. And I think, Jason, as a part of getting that message out, and the fact that Terry was able to tell that to our listeners that are listening to this program across the country, that is very troubling. That this would happen to a young man who she is stating, and correct me if I'm wrong, that has some limitations in communicating, and to be in a situation like that. We talked about that with Tanya and Liz. We understand what happens to an adult who are faced with these challenges of an arrest and a wrongful prosecution and all the stuff that comes with being just targeted. This young man has challenges from what I heard her, if I heard her correctly, as far as communicating and these things that are going on. This is something that cannot continue to happen. What are you doing as an organization, Jason, as you go forward to fight this? And you're apparently working on this case now. How is it looking in the, without you? I know you can't go too much in detail about the case. How is it looking now, though, as you go forward? What steps are taken? Have we contacted people on Capitol Hill in regards to this? Some congressmen, senators? What's going on with that?
Right now, we're currently seeking counsel out of the Denver/Boulder area who has the audacity to go against, you know, Prosecutor Finn and withdraw a plea bargain and, you know, try to start anew. It's an uphill climb, no doubt about it. But we feel there are a bevy of appellate issues, you know, if we cannot resolve things in the next 5 weeks when he's sentenced.
Oh, my goodness. So he has taken the plea, apparently, right, Jason?
Well, yeah, he pretty much had no choice other than go to life in prison. So it's part of that Lamont, that coerced plea bargain epidemic. As a matter of fact, there aren't many organizations that research into this, but of the couple I know of, anywhere between 6% and 8% of people who have accepted plea bargains are not guilty. And of the ones who do accept them, they're you know, the sentences are way too lengthy. And, you know, Lamont, Liz asked a question earlier, you know, before I was on, and she asked, you know, somebody must be benefiting from this. And my answer to that would be, yes, the prison lobby. You know, that includes prisons, correctional officers' unions, politicians, and let's not forget, America is the only industrialized democracy I'm aware of where judges and prosecutors are actually elected politicians. So there are a ton of people, what we call the elite 2%, who are profiting off this prison industrial complex, and the other 98% are suffering.
You know, the sad part about it, Jason, as I listen to you talk, we're talking about kids that we wonder, you know, you got elementary, you have middle school, you got high school, you got college, and then you have life or careers. What it seems to be that I'm hearing through the conversation tonight from what you've said, from what Terry said, from what Liz and Tanya said, we have a K-12 prison, school to prison pipeline here that we're graduating from elementary school. We're going to middle school for crime. Then we're going to high school, and we wonder why we have the largest incarceration rate in the United States, around the world. And this is unbelievable. It's something America needs to be paying attention to. Jason, what are steps going forward that we do to save our kids?
Lamont, continue to do what you're doing. I mean, A Just Cause is doing a great job. You know, we plan on doing, you know, a lot of the things you're doing, but we have to make Americans aware, the other 98%, aware. Too many people listen to these politicians on TV. They say we're the leader of the free world. Everybody wants to come to America. They don't realize we are the incarceration nation.
Oh, incarceration nation.
That's it. That's America. That's our name.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jason. Go ahead. Did you have something?
Well, 25% of the world's prisoners. And so, I mean, we are the incarceration nation. And, I can cite you rates from countries all over the world on six different continents that have much lower incarceration rates than we do. And it's not even close. And too many people don't know this. The elite 2% doesn't want to know this, doesn't want us to know this, and I'll tell you who is part of that elite 2%. Of that prison lobby, you need a voice to convince Americans that what is going on is the right thing. So what do? We have Nancy Grace's, we have, we have these crime attainment TV. Let's face it, if it bleeds, it leads. So we have the other 98% being scared, constantly scared, when they should be informed. And that's the job of my organization and A Just Cause, and I'm sure there are others.
All right, Jason, we got a couple of minutes on the other side of this break. Can you come on back with us? And I want folks to get an opportunity to get contact information for you. Can you hang with us for a few minutes on the other side of this break? And we'll have you give your information out to America in regards
Absolutely.
To what you're Okay, ladies and gentlemen of America, I tell you what, right now, it is 20 minutes till 10 o'clock in New York City on the East Coast of America. Right now, it is 20 till 8 here in Colorado Springs. The rain is falling, but understand down there in New York and in Florida, calm and peaceful. Tonight, we've learned something that gives the thought of a coming storm that needs to be addressed. I can tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, that storm has arrived, and Jason Weber is someone out here trying to make a difference. Terry gave us some information, very troubling, in regards to what's going on in the system right now with her son, who has, according to you, Jason, has basically been forced to sign a plea deal. And this is all in reference to what we believe school to prison pipeline that's going on in this country right now. I think it's something that we're definitely addressing. So, ladies and gentlemen of America, tonight is getting away from us as you wind down the evening from a long day, whatever you're involved in and whatever you're doing. We thank you for joining some time with us. We're coming back with Jason. He's going to give his contact information to America that we can join hands together. It takes a village to make a difference. Let's come together as a nation and bring change. And I tell you what, ladies and gentlemen, no other program has been more important than the program of dealing with our kids. And we need to address that issue. I'm Lamont Banks. This is AJC Radio, along with Sam Thurman, Lisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart. Wrap it up, whatever's going on at home. We're coming back to close out and tuck America to bed tonight. We'll be right back with you. This is AJC Radio, bringing the message of justice all around the world. We'll be right back.
The racial composition of the prison population in the United States is very different from the population at large. If people are worried about inequality in America today, I think this deserves more attention in the discussion. Racial inequality in the criminal justice system gets ignored because it doesn't affect most people. In 2010, over 1.6 million people were in state and federal prisons within the United States. So, 497 out of every 100,000 Americans were in jail. About half of 1%. Less than 1%. That doesn't seem very large, but when you separate that population by race, you recognize that the personal effects of the criminal justice system are very unequally shared throughout our society. Whites make up 64% of the total population, but only 31% of the incarcerated population. Blacks represent 14% of society, but 36% of the prison population. Hispanics are 16% of America, but 24% of the American prison population. Less than 1 in 100 Americans are currently in jail, but for some races, genders, and age groups, that ratio is a lot larger. For example, if you're young, black, and male, it's closer to about 1 in 4. That means you'd have a higher probability of going to jail than of getting married or going to college. These results are unequal and problematic, as poor black communities lack so many of their members. But what can be done? The causes of this trend are undoubtedly complicated and multi-causal. But there is reason to suggest that part of the blame is our criminal justice system itself. In the ways police officers enforce laws, in the ways that laws are written and prosecuted, and more. In many cases, it is not overt racism by individual actors. Many police officers, prosecutors, and judges are undoubtedly trying to be fair and trying to do the right thing. But economics can explain how unequal enforcement of the criminal law happens anyway. This is because the political and bureaucratic structure of the criminal justice system creates perverse incentives. The formal laws surrounding drug prohibition, for example, are written as if to be colorblind. But people with different levels of wealth face different costs and benefits to participating in the drug trade. Different groups consume different drugs at different rates, and lastly, those groups are politically represented in very different quantities. Thus, they are arrested and incarcerated at very different rates. How could minority groups hope to use the political process to fix inequality when they are systematically over-incarcerated and disenfranchised? Despite noble intentions, politics often does not affect the basic incentives of costs and benefits faced by political or citizen actors. We might need a new approach to social change if we are going to address these problems. We definitely need more study into the causes of inequality, and we should admit that radical changes might be both necessary and preferable to the status quo.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you hear that tone, we are in the jungle, and I guarantee you, for this battle, you better have the eye of the tiger to fight this battle. And I tell you what, someone has got the eye of the tiger tonight that's making a difference, Mr. Jason Weber, coming back with us on this program. And I tell you what, the jungle is putting it mildly, as we address the fight for our children and issues with juveniles in this country being targeted as a result of a judicial system that has failed. Jason, welcome back to the program tonight.
Hi, Lamont. If I could, I just want to mention, what we do is we highlight cases where we can see legally documented cases of injustice. For instance, I've got two teenagers out of the Sarasota, Florida area. One of them, his defense attorney flat out said he was not prepared for trial. So the prosecutor said, okay, well, if you're not prepared for trial, get ready to do a life sentence or accept this 35-year plea bargain, same amount of years. And I got another, that's Stephen Castaneda. We're still collecting funds for him to pay for his appellate counsel. And I got another teen, Joshua Swartz, who was sentenced to 15 years for basically possession of drugs. And, you know, Castaneda was 17, Joshua Swartz was 18. And you can find these all on our website, which is nationalcdp.org.
Okay.
That national is in Center Due Process, nationalcdp.org. And our Facebook, Twitter, everything is /nationalcdp. So we're pretty easy to find that way.
Okay, and is there a number, Jason, they need? Can they reach a main office, or is this the best way through the email and website? Is that the best way to get a hold of you?
No, our office number is 877-288-3260, or we have a contact form on our website, or contact at nationalcdp.org, or you can call our office at, like I said, 877-288-3260.
Okay, and Jason, that information we will post at AJCRadio.com. Where folks can go in and listen to this program that we have played tonight, that aired tonight, excuse me. You can go there at our website starting tomorrow and actually hear this program. And, Jason, we will do everything we can. We've had the privilege of communicating via Twitter. The social media, man, is the way to go. And I appreciate the opportunity in meeting you, talking to you, and sharing the same vision. And that is to bring justice to a nation that has gone out of control. And I want to thank you for taking some time tonight out of your busy schedule to spend some time with us in America tonight, to share it, you know, share what you do. We'd love to have you back on the program in the future. We'd like to have that if you accept that invitation from us.
Absolutely, DeMond. I would love to. I love what A Just Cause stands for. I love what you guys are doing. I don't think if I made that clear, but our Facebook is just facebook.com/nationalcdp, as is our Twitter. Twitter.com/nationalcdp, and I would love to continue to work with you, and if you'd ever like me on again, I'd love to be a guest again. I really do appreciate it.
No, Jason, and we appreciate you as an administrator of justice. Thanks for joining us tonight, and have a great evening. Stay safe out there, okay?
Thanks, Lamont. Thank you very much. You too.
All right, take care. And ladies and gentlemen of America, tonight has been a night about children and the future of America. And I'll tell you right now that we are looking to bring about change to a country that our children now have become a target of injustice. And I'll tell you what, we are looking for something to happen as change. And Sam, as we have talked tonight to these guests, Tanya, Liz, and Jason, these are people really trying to really save the children, the future of America.
Yeah, and you know, Lamont, as Jason was talking, one of the things that's so troubling about that is how, you know, the studies show that there are 25% of wrongful convictions, where as a result of false statements or coerced confessions. And so you end up locking up people for 30, 35, 40, 45 years. And if I understand the story that the mother was sharing with us earlier, Luke's mother, that the evidence is there. The DNA is there that shows that Luke didn't participate in this heinous crime that he was accused of. So you end up spending all of this time in prison only years later, after going through all the legal positioning, that someone will allow them to submit DNA testing to come back and say, oh, no, this young man didn't do anything. That's a waste. That is a waste. But like you said, you know, there's so much good work that's being done by all of our guests who were on this evening that we are really fortunate to have had them on this evening.
Oh, absolutely. And Cliff and Lisa, as I have, we've gone to this show tonight. There's something about the children of America that make a big difference. When you're talking about children, people usually, they can be going 50 miles an hour. When you mention the safety of children, people tend to slow down and slam on the brakes and say, wait a minute, it's time for something to be done. Cliff, as your thoughts as a father dealing with your son and having the burden of a father to be a father and example to your own son, what does this show do for you tonight?
Well, it lets you know that you have to be even more vigilant with your kids. And in America, to know that the thing that you have to protect your children from is law enforcement and the justice system. That is extremely troubling, because how do you say when law enforcement comes, that's supposed to be a person you're supposed to run to for help. If something happens, the justice system is supposed to be there for, to prove whether you're innocent or guilty. And when you're innocent and the justice system doesn't work for you, that is the troubling part of America. And it's proven. I mean, it has been proven that the incarceration rate, the rate of people that are being exonerated. I mean, to have a record year of exonerations in 2014, that is one of the most sickening stats that we as a country could ever have.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff, thank you again. And mothers and fathers of America, as dads come home from a hard day work, perhaps mom has put an apple cake in the oven and had some dessert set for the kids and the family tonight. This program tonight deals with one issue. All that we work for, all that we strive for, is to bring a better America for our children. And tonight we've shown one true thing, and that is lies in jeopardy if we don't come together and say enough is enough. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to ask you to please join AJC Radio in a just cause as we fight for justice around the world for our kids. Tell your family to go out to AJCRadio.com. We listen to this program, perhaps make it an evening, maybe one evening. It's kind of a little warm outside. Pull out the lemonade and the strawberry drink and maybe some watermelon and sit down around the couch, folks, and let your kids hear what's going on in America and what we intend to do to fight injustice. And boy, what a great show tonight. Lisa, as we get ready to go into the close of this program tonight, we cannot close without going to those responsible for the wrongful conviction of the RP6. And we have some perpetrators of justice that we need to name who are guilty and are perpetrators of justice. Lisa, read the names of the perpetrators, please.
Okay. Our list is about 25 people long. We've got U.S. Attorney John Walsh, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, Assistant U.S. Attorney Sunita Hazra, Attorney Greg Goldberg, Judge Christine Arguello, Judge Jerome Holmes, Judge Bobby Baldock, Judge Harris Hartz, Judge Jackson, Judge Schaefer, Darlene Martinez, Agent John Smith, Agent Robert Moen, former Agent John Epke, former Agent Gary Hilberry, Attorney Thomas Goodread, Attorney Clifford Barnard, Attorney Thomas Richard, Attorney Robert Berger, Attorney Mitchell Baker, Attorney Boston Stanton Jr., Attorney Rick Kornfeld, Attorney Mark Garagos, and Susan Holland.
Man, Cliff, before you go there, Cliff, make no mistake about it. These are perpetrators of justice that are guilty of violation of the law of the Constitution of the United States and violation of human rights. Cliff, go ahead and thank our folks for doing what they do.
Absolutely. We want to first say thank you to all of our guests who spent a little time, took out of your evening tonight to be with us. That's Liz Ryan, Tanya Washington, and Jason Weber. We appreciate you guys coming on and spending part of your evening with AJC Radio. We want to say thank you to everyone in the chat room. All of your questions and your comments were very much appreciated. To our production team, Captain Kyle and Dustin Jackson of K&D Productions, helping out Ill Skillers Girl in the control room. They got those interns in there, the Honeycomb Kids. They're doing a great job, as you can hear across the airways. Everything is coming across clearly. To our production support team, we want to say thank you. They give us accurate and up-to-date information so that we can pass that on to you. And to the truth, we know that you're out there. We always appreciate you.
And ladies and gentlemen, the RP6, but definitely keep them in your prayers as we seek justice for the RP6 wrongfully convicted men who have the answer. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Lamont Banks, along with Sam Thurman, Lisa Stewart, and Cliff Stewart, and all the AJC radio team, saying good night and happy and pleasant thoughts as we march on in search for justice. Thanks for joining us. Have a great night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Seeing clients like mine who are in second and third grade being referred to court for things like throwing pencils and who are being suspended dozens and dozens of times in second grade for doing in large part what we would expect a second grader to do.
Studies demonstrate that children most harshly affected by these disciplinary practices live in low-income minority communities, and the data is disturbing. It shows that black students are 4.2 times more likely than their white classmates to be suspended or expelled for the very same infraction. As a result, black students lose 4 times more school days than their white counterparts. For minority children living in poor communities, the role of the school has shifted from a ladder out of poverty into a pathway to prison.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. So just as I say we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't going to let any injunction turn us around.